appreciation and gratitude to everybody here. I know something like this takes a lot of planning, a lot of work, a lot of inconvenience for the people that are hosting it. And one of the highlights of my year, every year, is coming here and getting to see everybody again and fellowshipping with all of you and getting to know new faces too. And it's just a real joy, and I'll never adequately express the gratitude I feel for the assembly here doing that ministry. So it's a wonderful thing. And one last thing I'd like to mention before I begin. In September, the third week in September, up in the western New York area, there's a conference that we host with a church that's in the Brockport, New York area. And we usually do it in conjunction together each year. This will be our fourth year of the conference. And we'd like to encourage you, if you can make it up into New York, to attend. It would be a lot of fun, edifying, and I think it's well worth the trip.
Is there a contact number?
Well, I can give you my phone number. That would be a good place to start. It would be area code 716-374-0455.
Can you repeat
that? Sure. It's 716-374-0455. And you can also look on our website. It's beacon-ministries.org.
That's the third Saturday?
It's the third weekend. It'd be Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So, having said all that, why don't we turn in our Bibles to the book of Exodus, chapter number 10. I want to pick up where I left off yesterday. And I want to look at this idea of Pharaoh's heart being hardened. There's a number of questions that come to my mind when I read this passage, and it has for a number of years. And one of the things that always comes to my mind is, why does God have to continually harden Pharaoh's heart? Wouldn't once have been sufficient? But why does he have to do it over and over again? Another question I often come up with is, what exactly does that mean? And I know we all have our idea of what it means, but really, what does it mean? And then, does hardening Pharaoh's heart mean that Pharaoh cannot respond? So I want to look at two verses here in chapter 10 to begin our study today. And I want to look at verse 1. Yahweh said to Moses, "Enter to Pharaoh, for I myself have hardened his heart and the hearts of his courtiers, that I may set these my signs among them." Now in verse number 1 here, we see that God hardens Pharaoh's heart, and he also hardens the hearts of Pharaoh's court. So you have two different groups of people whose hearts have been hardened by God. Now, it's interesting because by the time we get to verse number 7, we read something interesting. "Now the courtiers of Pharaoh said to him, 'How long shall this man become a trap to us? Dismiss the men that they may serve Yahweh their Elohim. Do you not yet know that Egypt perishes?'" So it's interesting. These two verses lay out something that's really very profound. If God hardened the hearts of Pharaoh, and he hardened the hearts of Pharaoh's court, why is it that Pharaoh's court can't can respond to what it is that Moses is saying. And they do. What is it that they want to do? They want to release Israel so that they can go and serve Yahweh and not be the perishing of Israel, or of Egypt. So here you have two groups of people who have had their hearts hardened by God, yet one of them can still respond to God. So hardening here does not mean that you cannot respond. That's important to understand. And in fact, harden is not a good translation. And we're going to look at this in some detail, because it's not going to be translated as hardened in a number of areas of Scripture. It's going to have a different meaning. The word hardened in the King James is going to be translated from these three different words. In the Concordant, you're going to have basically two words that are going to be used. Or these three words are still going to be used, but it's going to be two different words in English translated for it. You're going to have straightway, or not straightway, but strengthened. It's going to be translated as steadfast and hardened, and once as honored in the passage. So let's look at these words for a few minutes and get an idea of how these words are to be understood. But before we get into these words, I want to show the idea of contingency of what God is doing here. And it's always open to the idea that there's a possible response that can be positive. If you look at Exodus chapter 8, look at verse 2. Exodus 8, verse 2. And what's the next word if you have a concordant rendering? Exodus 8, verse 2. The first word is and. Anyone have the concordant Old Testament here? Okay.
And if.
If. If is a big word here, because if implies that there's a contingency. This will happen if you do this. But it's possible, because I'm using the word if, that I might do that. It implies contingency. And if you remain a refuser to dismiss them, behold, I will be striking all your territory with frogs. Now here's the whole thing. If you refuse, but what's the contingency? What could happen? I know it's early.
Not all words.
If not,
there's the possibility that this will not happen. If you refuse, this is going to happen. But there is a possibility they may not refuse. It's a warning. If you go with me here to Exodus chapter number 9 and verse 2. For if you remain a refuser to dismiss them, the idea he's getting at again is, it's contingency. It's an escalating thing of judgment that's going to continue if you continue to refuse what I'm requesting. We read the same word in Exodus chapter 10 in verse 4. And in Exodus 10 verse 4, for if you remain a refuser, and he continues on. The whole point is that God is giving language which implies that something has a decision to be responded to, and how the decision is responded to will determine whether he brings forth a judgment or not. God's whole purpose here is to let his people come out of Egypt, to be able to serve him, to save them from their bondage. So you begin to see this. God's divine hardening does not remove their ability to make decisions, because if it did, he could not use language like he's using here. You could not be reading about Pharaoh's heart being hardened and his court being hardened and then his court responding to him. So how should we understand these words? I want to look at these words in order here. This first word here is pronounced kabed, and it literally means to be honored or glorified. And that's the way it's translated the overwhelming time it's used in the Old Testament. I'm going to give you a couple of examples just out of the book of Exodus, how this word is translated in the Concordant. Okay? In Exodus 14, Exodus 14, verse number 17. And I beheld me making the heart of the Egyptians steadfast, that they may enter after them, for I shall indeed be glorified over Pharaoh and over all his army, over his chariots and over his horsemen. Anyone want to guess what word was the word kabed there?
Steadfast.
Nope.
No.
Glory.
Glory. It's the word glorified. In that, the word there means to be glorified. Look at Exodus 20 in the giving of the Ten Commandments. Verse number 12. The very first word here is the word kabed. Glorify your father and your mother, that your days may be prolonged on the ground which Yahweh your Elohim is giving to you. Glorify. Literally, and just get a good Bible concordance, you look up the word, the overwhelming majority of the time the word is translated, it will be translated as glorified, glory, or honor. Now let's look at this word using that understanding of the word. If you go back to Exodus chapter number 8. Exodus chapter number 8. I'm going to use it here the way it's overwhelmingly used even in the concordant Old Testament translation. And this is the way it's typically rendered. Exodus 8, verse 15. When Pharaoh saw that there came to be a mitigation, he honored his heart, and he hearkened not to them, just as Yahweh had spoken. Gives it a little bit different meaning, doesn't it? Let's look at it, chapter 8, verse 32. Yet Pharaoh honored his heart, even at this time, and he did not dismiss the people. Let's look at chapter 9, verse 34. Now Pharaoh saw that the rain, the hail, and the thunders had halted, yet he continued to sin and honored his heart, he and his courtiers. You could also translate it, instead of using honored, as glorified. He glorified his heart. What does that mean? He exalted is the idea. He placed undue preference upon what?
His own thoughts.
His own thoughts, his own heart. The problem we have is that we have allowed biased thinking to creep into our translations, which then biases us to a certain way of thinking. The idea is that Pharaoh's heart was against God, and God allowed him to act according to his heart. When God says he hardened his heart, he honored Pharaoh's heart. In other words, he allowed Pharaoh to act the way Pharaoh wanted to act. That's all it's saying. God isn't somehow supernaturally reaching down and saying, ha ha, I got you, Rick. I'm going to take you and make your brain into some deviant brain.
That's our bit done. I did it myself.
I have no response to that one.
So, should we kind of look at that point of from an aspect, let's say for instance, I was standing here on this floor and somebody came up to me and he started stepping on my toes.
Right.
And he's really stepping on my toes. It's really hurt. Okay?
Right.
And eventually it hardened my heart towards that person. Now, that person didn't just jump inside me and harden my heart. He was stepping on my toes. That's not my heart down there. Okay?
Right.
So he's hurting me, or he's doing something that causes me to harden my heart.
See, the problem is we read right from the get-go that that was already the thinking that was there. It wasn't something God put there. He was already in that condition before we even get to the beginning of the encounter. So it's not a case of where he's being hardened because he doesn't like what Moses is saying, for instance. The thought is already there. He already despises Yahweh. He already despises Israel before the contest ever begins.
But why is he despising Yahweh?
Well, again, he's despising them because he hates the Jewish people.
There's a cause and effect for his heart.
Mm-hmm. Right. But it's inbred in himself. He's doing it to himself. God is just allowing him to have his actions follow their logical conclusion. In other words, he's honoring Pharaoh's heart. Pharaoh's heart wants to go this way, and God said, go ahead. You can do it. It's not where God is doing anything other than saying, go ahead.
You could say just like he would let the nations go their own way for a period of time.
Right.
Or whatever.
It's like as a parent when your child decides that they want to go to college, and you allow that child to make the decision on what college they want to go to. They have a set course they want to go to, and as a parent, you step back and say, okay, go ahead.
Did Pharaoh kind of consider himself a god anyway?
He did. And he considered himself greater than God. And that's part of the reason he despised the Israel people.
By the way, Exodus 5:2 describes the condition before this whole thing with Moses
Thank
took
you.
Place.
Thank you.
Where he says, who is the Lord that I shall obey his voice anyway? I don't know this guy.
Thank you. Yeah. And it does. It fully tells us what Pharaoh's thinking is. The last time we read of the word Kaveh in the account here is in Exodus 10, where we started in verse 1, where it says, Yahweh said to Moses, enter to Pharaoh, for I myself have, again I'll use the word, as it's used in the overwhelming majority of the time by the concordant, honored his heart and the hearts of his courtiers, that I may set these my signs among them. In other words, in chapter 10 here, verse 1, God is just honoring what Pharaoh wants to do. He's allowing him to do it. He's not causing him to do anything. He's not reaching down and somehow superimposing his will to make Pharaoh do something Pharaoh wouldn't do. He's just saying, okay, Pharaoh, do what you want to do. I'll respect it, whatever it is. We have to understand, before I go any further, and I want to bring up this point because it's important. The narrative really asserts to us that the purpose of God is to be glorified and that the Egyptians would know that, and I'm going to use the phrase that's used in five different passages, know that I am Yahweh. Right? It's used. That phrase is used in Exodus 7:5. Exodus 7:17, Exodus 8:10, Exodus 8:22, Exodus 9:14 and Exodus 14:4. That phrase, know that I am Yahweh. The account is telling us that God's purpose is that he would be glorified and the Egyptians would know that I am Yahweh. Now, why is that significant? That's a phrase that's used when it implies more than just intellectual understanding. It implies the idea of allowing someone to become orientated towards or with something. For instance, God oftentimes would appear and he says, I am Yahweh. And the individual begins to have an understanding of who God is, but they begin to develop a relationship with God. God's purpose here is not to destroy Egypt, it's to save Egypt. The idea isn't, I don't want to kill Pharaoh. I want Pharaoh to realize he's not a god, that I'm the true God, and he becomes orientated towards me. That's the purpose of what's going on here. And the way God brings the judgments to bear is to eradicate each of Egypt's gods in a systematic way. Each judgment is a judgment against one of the gods of Israel, of Egypt. And each of those gods are going to be seen to be powerless at the power of Yahweh. With the idea that Pharaoh and the Egyptian people would become orientated towards Yahweh. That's the purpose. Now what happens? Obviously they reject that. But God doesn't come around and twist their arm and say, believe it. No. He allows them to continue the way they want to go. Either way, God's going to get glorified out of it. But think of it this way. If Egypt had repented, and Pharaoh had let the Israelite people go, and Pharaoh did become orientated towards God, would Yahweh have been glorified?
Yes.
Was Yahweh glorified with Egypt not doing those things? Yes. Either way, he's going to be glorified. It's up to the Egyptian king, Pharaoh, to determine how he's going to be glorified. I'll either be glorified in the destruction of your people and your nation, or I will be glorified in the preservation of your nation and your people. Now, there's another word here. And that second word is the word kozak. And again, I want to look here at a couple of different ways that the concordant translation will render this word. Okay, this word's not used as frequently as this. So we're going to see it used, for instance, in 2 Chronicles chapter 11. 2 Chronicles chapter number 11. Okay, and in 2 Chronicles chapter number 11, we're going to look here at verse number 11. 2 Chronicles 11, verse number 11. And we read here, he reinforced the fortifications and put governors in them along with storehouses of food, oil, and wine. The word here is reinforced, fortified in the King James. But the idea is he reinforced. Now, I want to give a little bit of an understanding about the word reinforce. If I'm reinforcing something, what am I doing?
I'm
shoring up what's already there. I'm not putting something new there in the sense of it wasn't there before. I'm taking what's already there and I'm firming it up. Right? So he's reinforcing. Let's look at another place this is translated a different way. In Genesis 48.
Bill, can I ask a question?
Sure.
Is the word hard or glorified?
It's translated as steadfast in the Concordance.
So when it says, I will harden Pharaoh's heart, is it the same word you're referring to?
It is.
Fortification.
Right. Yeah, in the Concordant translation, Dan, it would be translated in the Exodus account as steadfast.
I'll use the version Paul used, I'm sorry.
Okay. But in Genesis chapter 48, let's look at verse 2. When it was told to Jacob, saying, behold, your son Joseph has come to you, then Israel encouraged himself and sat up on the couch. Now, the word here is encouraged. Okay, Genesis 48:2. When it was told to Jacob, saying, behold, your son Joseph has come to you, then Israel encouraged himself and sat up on the couch. So it's the word encouraged here. And in fact, in Judges chapter 3, I'm not going to go there, but in Judges chapter 3, verse number 12, it's also going to be translated as encouraged. And literally, that's a good understanding of this word, to encourage. Think of it this way. Let's look at one of the places this is used. In Exodus 7, verse 13, actually, before we get to 13, I want to start at 10 so we get a flow here and we can understand it. I'm going to use the word encouraged here for Kozak. Verse 10, Moses and Aaron entered to Pharaoh and did so just as Yahweh had instructed. Aaron flung his rod before Pharaoh and before his courtiers, and it became a snake. Pharaoh, however, called for the wise men and for the enchanters. And even they, the sacred scribes of Egypt, did so with their occultisms. Each man flung his rod, and they became snakes. Then Aaron's rod swallowed up their rod. Yet the heart of Pharaoh was encouraged, and he did not hearken to them, just as Yahweh had spoken. In other words, what happened here? Well, he had a test, right? And in that test, Egypt's magicians and wizards, or whatever you want to call them, were able to replicate what Aaron did. What did that do? Well, the King James says hardened, right? But it wasn't hardened in the sense of how we're thinking. It was encouraging. Pharaoh was encouraged. My magicians can do that. It encouraged him in his resistance of God. It encouraged him to continue on the same path. God didn't do that to him. It was already there. It's important for us to grasp this.
Dan. So you know, the Calvinist King James Version says there, and he, referring to God, hardened Pharaoh's heart, instead of saying, yes, Pharaoh hardened his own heart.
Right. Right. Here it's specific that it's Pharaoh. It doesn't have anything in the idea of he or any sort of phrase there. What it says is, yet the heart of Pharaoh was steadfast in the Concordant, or encouraged, and he did not hearken to them. So you have that idea here. Let me go to another place that's used. In verse 22. Also the sacred scribes of Egypt did so with their occultisms. Chapter 7, verse 22. Also the sacred scribes of Egypt did so with their occultisms, hence the heart of Pharaoh was encouraged, or steadfast. But encouraged is the way it's typically rendered. It was encouraged. And he did not hearken to them just as Yahweh had spoken. Why was it encouraged? Because again, his magicians were able to replicate what it is that Aaron and Moses were doing. It encouraged him. It's like, I have no reason to fear. We can do this. It's not the idea of God reaching down and forcing Pharaoh to come contrary to God or to be make him more contrary to God. No. And even when Romans chapter 9 implies all of these things, you have to understand the context. And the context comes back to these verses that we're reading. When it says that he hardened his heart, the equivalent there would have been this word. Right? He honored it. Romans 9 isn't saying what people are trying to make it say. It's a misunderstanding of the original language. It's a misunderstanding of the way the word is used. It's a theological bias that has forced us to look at it through a parameter that has been given to us way back from Augustine. And it's confounded Christianity ever since. I have a really important question to think about. Just put your thinking cap on for a second. If God hardened Pharaoh's heart in the way that it's typically taught, and Pharaoh does everything he does in the context, did Pharaoh sin?
He couldn't sin if he was acting under God.
He could not sin if he was acting in accord to the mark that he was given, and he hits it. Think about that. If God programs certain individuals to do certain things, and they do the things that God has programmed to do, they hit the mark. That's not sin. That's just logic. So, it's interesting when we begin to think and look at how words are used. Let's look at this last word. This last word here, very similar to this one. It's pronounced not kabed, but kabad. And it's used twice in the book of Exodus. Okay? Let me go to the first usage of the word in Exodus. In chapter 7, verse 14. Then Yahweh said to Moses, "Gloried is the heart of Pharaoh. He has refused to dismiss the people." The word "gloried" there is the way the word is typically used. That's a good rendering. Glory. Now notice here how it records it. Pharaoh's heart in verse 13, right, was encouraged. Verse 14, his heart is gloried. What's being said here? Well, because my magicians were able to replicate Aaron turning his staff or rod into a snake or a serpent, I'm encouraged. And now my heart is lifted up and I'm glorifying it. That's the idea being recorded here. Again, it's not God doing it though. It's Yahweh himself. This is important for us to really grasp. It's used one other time in this account in chapter 9. Look at verse 7. Then Pharaoh sent, and behold, not even one had died from the cattle of Israel. Yet the heart of Pharaoh hardened, and he did not dismiss the people. Again, it's the same word translated glorified earlier. And you could read it this way. Then Pharaoh sent, and behold, not even one had died from the cattle of Israel. Yet the heart of Pharaoh lifted itself up, glorified itself, would all be good renderings. And he did not dismiss the people. The whole point here, and by the way, in verse 9 here, God's not the one doing it either. The whole point is this. God is trying to communicate something that brings glory to him. God is not a vindictive God. God doesn't take pleasure in destroying and punishing us. God doesn't look forward to, I'm going to get you just because I don't like you. Although when you look at Rick, some people might want to do that.
Most.
God really wants all people to come to the knowledge of who he is, does he not? He wants us to do it the easy way. But he understands there's a lot of individuals who aren't going to do it the easy way. They're going to do it the difficult way. And what he allows is for the course of a person's thought process and desire to run its course, but they're going to reap the consequences of where that takes them. He's going to give them the warnings. He gave Pharaoh a number of warnings, didn't he? 10 of them. This is going to happen. This is going to happen. This is going to happen. And each one escalates. And Pharaoh continues to glorify and honor his own desire. And when he does so, it's at the expense of his nation. It destroys his economy. It destroys his nation's worship system because their gods are laid out and destroyed before their very eyes. It weakens Pharaoh. And in every single case, Pharaoh can make the easy decision and say, okay, I'll let you go, and understand the power of God by doing so and save his nation from what's going to befall them. The ball is in Pharaoh's court. There's a responsibility, but it's not God's responsibility there. It was Pharaoh's. God isn't going to hold somebody accountable of something he programmed to do and then punish them for doing it. That's not even rational. That's sadistic. God holds you responsible for things you should be doing and don't do. Or praises you for doing the things you should be doing. But either way, the ball was in Pharaoh's court to make the decision. I want to close here and give an example of this same idea of responsibility and choice out of the Apostle Paul's writings. And in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, we come to a very interesting passage. We'll conclude with this passage. But in 1 Corinthians chapter number 9, look at verse 16. We'll read down through verse 18 here. Verse 16, for if I should be bringing the evangel, it is not for me to boast in, for necessity is lying upon me. For it were woe to me if I should not be bringing the evangel. For if I am engaging in this, what's the word there?
Voluntarily.
Voluntarily, I have what?
Wages.
Wages. Yet if involuntarily, I have been entrusted with an administration. What then is my wage? What is Paul saying there? Someone want to summarize that?
If he brings the evangel which he was given voluntarily, then he will receive wages for it.
Right.
If he doesn't do it voluntarily, he's still going to be bringing the evangel, but he won't get wages for it.
That's exactly what he's saying.
It'd be like Jonah.
Like Jonah.
Jonah preached to the people of Nineveh, but not voluntarily.
Right. Either way, it's going to get preached, right?
Mm-hmm.
Either way, the evangel is going to get preached. You're either going to do it willingly or unwillingly.
It's a servant who would be entrusted with an administration, and so it would be a disobedience.
That's correct. And that's the whole idea. Either way, the evangel is going to go out. But if Paul does it willingly, it has different ramifications to it. If he does it unwillingly, there's different things. Jonah ended up preaching after having a whole lot of heartache that he self-inflicted upon himself to just do what God wanted him to do to begin with. Ultimately, wasn't Israel released? Didn't Israel get free from Egyptian bondage? They were going to get freed regardless. How it was going to be accomplished really was dependent on how Pharaoh responded. He could do it voluntarily or unwillingly. If he did it unwillingly, it's not a good thing. There's a lot of pain and anguish. If he had done it voluntarily, God's going to reward him for that thinking. And part of the reward is a closer understanding of who Yahweh is. He would know who Yahweh is. That's God's purpose. So the whole idea here that we have to understand, and the word voluntarily, by the way, implies that you have a decision. So we have to understand. We have to understand. There is a lot of things in Scripture that tell us that an individual has choices that they can make. Yes, God will say, this is what's going to be accomplished. How you get to that point has a lot of options. And it can be done in an easy way, or it can be done in a hard way. But either way, ultimately, this is going to come about. That's really what's being taught there. So,
It seems that when you receive God's revelation, he advances you further and gives you further revelation. And our great concern, of course, is the people that around us that we're always trying to witness to, that they don't receive the revelation. So it just kind of stops. Unless, I mean, it can come again to them. But there's no reward in it for them as far as further revelation that's being given them. I can see this in what you're saying here with this.
Yeah. And I think it's important for us to understand that.
Can I ask?
Sure.
Would you sum it up this way? Here's Pharaoh, who's the worshiper of the various gods of Egypt, and he runs smack dab into the God of the universe. And God says, Pharaoh, we can do this the easy way or the hard way. Your choice. I choose the hard way. Boom, judgment one. Want to choose door number two this time? No. Boom. Judgment. How about door number three? Boom. Judgment. So on and so forth.
Yep.
And either way, and that argument, I just want to say here, it's the best talk I've heard on this topic, and I appreciate it. This people are always saying that God wouldn't have been glorified unless he destroyed Egypt. But he used Cyrus later on.
Right.
In a peaceful manner, and God was glorified. He could have been glorified if Pharaoh said, you know what, sounds like a good idea, because later, Egypt is going to call Jehovah their God.
Right.
And so the option was door number one, and he had seven or eight options here.
Sure.
And he blew it every time.
He did.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Excellent.
And that, I guess, would be a good place to conclude.
Okay. Well, we'll have a break until 10:35.
Good job. Glad you could use it. And I even helped you out there by saying, maybe I'll get pretty rocky.